feet first. We're in the balcony of the theater in Stratford. It's 1974. I'm 21 years old, visiting England for cultural enrichment. This trip should be heaven. It is mostly heaven, but it also includes a production of King John. Even Shakespeare, I've learned, could have an off day.
As little prince, having so great a title to be more prince, as may be, you are sad.
Indeed, I have been merrier.
Mercy on me. Methinks nobody should be sad but I.
During intermission, the lights are up and I'm sitting next to my new friend Michelle, who I am about to discover has a phobia. Behind her, an oaf in our group named Barton exhales a huge yawn, stretches himself, and lays a foot in the gap between our seats. It's a big foot, out of its shoe, out of its sock, and even to me it's as shocking and grotesque as a cold, dead fish. But to Michelle, this foot is evil. She shrieks. Fortunately, we're a few rows back from the rail of the balcony. Otherwise, I have no doubt she would swan dive to escape the obscenity of this foot. Many years later, visiting my parents, I remember Michelle's hysterical reaction. My mother is already well into dementia. My father, 88 years old, is mentally razor sharp and still physically strong, except these days for his leg. I'm here to look at the leg. I've invited myself to lunch, which he prepares, limping from the kitchen to the dining room table to lay out soup, lunch meats, bread, cottage cheese, and mixed fruit. "We're doing okay," he says. A cane leans against his chair in the living room. He's determined to take care of my mother, to keep her out of assisted living as long as possible, even to the end, even if it kills him. "Have you had it looked at?" "I took an aspirin last night," he says. "That helped some." My mother comes to the table and sits down. She's been looking for some girls in the other room, some girls that exist only in her mind. She smiles at me now, a conspiratorial smile that suggests we're sharing a little joke. When my dad sits down, we say grace and eat. Throughout the meal, he reminds her of her business. "Finish your soup. That's your bread. Would you like some more cheese?" We save the leg for dessert, and it's a doozy. After lunch, he pulls up his pant leg and shows me his swollen limb. It's the color of a rotting plum. At the end of the leg, looking like it could explode any minute, is my father's foot. As body parts go, the foot doesn't get much respect. We lavish care upon hair, call eyes the window of the soul, and look with awe upon skilled hands. Breasts, legs, and even butts are the object of desire, the stuff of fetish. Feet, also fetish-worthy, get some attention. On the other hand, with their thick slabs of scaly calluses, their hideous toenails so like hooves and horns, feet link us to the animal world. Feet remind us we are of the earth. Humble feet take us on this journey through life. We owe them greatly, yet we look upon them only when we have to. There are feet, one might say, and there are feet. In Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction, John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson stand with their backs to the camera, discoursing about the degree of intimacy and the erotic import of foot massage. If you take the time to look, you might see that Uma Thurman has a fine foot. I have a friend who wears a tiny gold ring on one toe. In flip-flops, she has a comely enough foot, but in the end, it's still just a foot. I have never heard anyone rhapsodize about feet. In high school, a kid I knew always said, "I like a girl with nice teeth." Not feet. Teeth. Like many people, I'm blessed with moderately prehensile toes. But is this a blessing? At a picnic, I can pick up a fallen napkin with a bare foot. But who would dab their lips with that napkin? When my kids were infants, I often put their bare feet in my mouth. About the time they started walking, I stopped. Some years ago, I accompanied my son to a birthday party. He was in elementary school. The party was on a winter weeknight at a roller skating rink. We drove through ice and slush, arriving a little late, and once inside we were greeted, as always, with the unmistakable, pervasive smell of feet. While my son skated with his friends, I sat with moms and dads. One dad was a podiatrist. He was a cheerful, nervous man who worked hard and planned, he said, to retire at 50. That night when it came time for pizza and cake, the skating area cleared. I tied on rented skates and started doing laps, enjoying the exhilaration of having wheels fixed to my feet, enjoying the music, the speed on the straightaways, the centrifugal thrill of counterclockwise curves. On one of these curves, why, I don't know, one skate betrayed me, and I went down hard. You know when your bones break. I knew. I felt a quick, hot pain and broke into a cold sweat. Mostly, I noticed the sudden loss of function in my left hand. I rolled off the floor toward pizza and cake. "I saw that," the podiatrist said. He sat me down. He took my hand in his, gently palpated the area. He put my arm in a sling and iced the wrist. He laid an ice pack on the back of my neck and told me the name of a wrist man to ask for at the hospital. I remember leaving the rink and its footy smell that night, gaining the fresh cold air. I never again put wheels between my feet and the ground. My father has a long episode. Infection, antibiotics, swelling, and the tender, terrifying foot. Then he recovers. He gets back on his feet. He takes care of my mother. He walks up and down the stairs in their home. He takes my mother to the grocery store, where they slowly make their way up and down the aisles. He drives to the podiatrist. The podiatrist who held my hand gave up feet and retired some time ago. After England, Michelle walked in her earth shoes out of my life and never came back. How many pairs of shoes have I worn out since then? The feet go on. Poor, underappreciated feet. They are puffy and irresistible as dinner rolls on babies. Bulbous with bunions and corns, they are fungus farms on the aged. Feet are gross and great. When we approach the edge of the water, it's the lowly toe that goes first. We await its verdict. It's all right. We can go.